If you're interested in listening ad-free, go to patreon.com/drnosleep. There you can enjoy my ad-free podcast and never have to listen to ads again. That's patreon.com/drnosleep. Now time for the story.
Talk to Nosleep.
Baz steps into the small windowless room and fixes me with a grim expression.
Come on, Baz,
I say.
It was a setup. Someone wants me out of the picture.
Baz says nothing, his dark eyes looking past me at the two guards standing close by. His dark skin is wrinkled, his dreadlocks threaded with gray. Despite his age, he moves smoothly, clearly still capable after all these years. He has taught me a lot, and he's always had my back. But this time, I'm not so sure even he can get me out of this.
Give us a minute,
he says to the guards.
It's almost time, sir,
one of the guards says.
I know what time it is,
Baz says. He holds up a key in one hand and tells the guards that he'll remove my cuffs before I go out into the corridor to face what I have to face. The guards move through the same door Baz used, glancing at me with something like relief on their faces. They didn't want to be the ones to remove my cuffs, anyway. They know what my hands are capable of. Once they're gone, I say,
the job was approved by the association. Someone messed with the package, had me kill the wrong guy.
I looked at the package myself,
Baz says.
It seemed fine to me.
Yeah, well, it would, wouldn't it? Otherwise, it wouldn't be much of a setup.
Baz sighs.
There's nothing I can do for you, Slade.
I know who it is, that bastard.
Baz backhands me across the mouth, cutting the words off.
Right now, you still have a chance of getting out of this alive,
he says.
Not much of a chance, but it's better than nothing. If you start throwing accusations around, they'll just have you executed.
I clench my jaw, knowing he's right. Baz sticks his hands in his pockets and glances at the floor. He walks around behind me to where my hands are cuffed. I think he's just going to release my hands, like the rules state. But I feel a sharp pain in my wrist. I don't say anything and don't make a move. I trust Baz implicitly. And I think I know what he's just done. Something that could get him executed if he's caught. The cuffs come off, and I bring my arms around, shaking my hands to get the blood flowing. Baz tosses the cuffs to the floor and steps around to look at me.
It's only hand weapons,
he says.
You're good in close quarters. Just remember what I taught you. Let it flow.
He winks at me, pats me on the shoulder, and moves through the side door. I step up to the main door and wait. I can feel whatever Baz injected me with starting to take effect. It's as if my muscles are tightening and loosening all at once. My senses sharpen, and my breathing slows. The metal door slides open, revealing a long corridor filled with men dressed in suits. They're armed with various hand weapons. Knives, hatchets, ice picks, hammers, and various other implements. They all stare at me, waiting. There are cameras all along the corridor that will record the whole thing. Anyone who draws my blood will get $100,000. Anyone who takes a digit or a limb or an eye will get $500,000. Whoever lands a killing blow will get $1,000,000. Of course, they have to survive to collect. I've been among the men in the metal corridor, waiting for some poor bastard to try and fight his way through. Now I wonder how many of those men I helped kill were set up, just like me. Fuck it, here goes nothing. The corridor is only wide enough for two men to attack at a time, which is the only reason I have much of a chance at all. I scream as I run toward the first two men in the hallway. The one on the left has a hammer, and the one on the right has a knife. I head for the guy with the hammer, going full speed at him. But at the last moment, I throw myself to the right, kicking the guy with the knife in the chest and sending him slamming into the wall before he falls down. Using the momentum from the kick, I move back left, slamming my elbow into the other guy's head. He stumbles and I move with him, yanking the hammer out of his hand and cracking his skull with it. I turn just in time to deflect another man's attack. I knock his ice pick to the side with the hammer and grab him by the neck, smashing the curve of my forehead into his face. He falls down, unconscious, but the guy with the knife I kicked is now up and charging me, side by side with a guy wielding a machete. Swinging the hammer, I make the machete guy duck. The knife guy slashes out at me, and I'm not fast enough to dodge back. The blade opens the skin of my right shoulder before I swing the hammer at him. The claws sink into the meat of his neck, and I'm trying to pull the tool out when the machete guy swings at me. I let go of the hammer, moving my hand just as the machete swings down and thunks into the knife guy's arm. While the machete guy pulls the blade out, I snatch up the knife and jam it under his chin. Then I take the machete from him and use it on the two men rushing up to fight me next, making quick work of the two men. I move down the corridor, taking all comers. I get stabbed and sliced several times, but I leave a mess of bloody and dying men behind me. By the time I make it to the end of the corridor, I've lost a lot of blood, but I'm still alive. The door at the end slides open, and I get a quick glimpse of Baz and another man waiting for me, the man who set me up, Caesar. Baz is sitting against the wall on the other side of the door, bleeding from a chest wound. Caesar has a bloody knife in one hand, and he's holding a small canister up in the other. He sprays something out of the canister, straight into my eyes. It burns immediately, making it impossible for me to keep my eyes open.
Bright,
Baz calls, but I don't understand. Not until I sense movement and move on reflex as a blade slices down the right side of my chest. I move back, eyes still closed, and I remember my training.
Left,
Baz calls, and I parry right, swinging out with the machete and hitting nothing but air.
Down,
my mentor says. I jump, feeling something pass under my feet.
Left.
I spin to the right, slicing out with the machete as hard as I can. I feel the blade hit something. There's a choking sound, and I pull the blade out. Then there's a wet thump. Forcing my eyes open with some effort, I see Caesar on the floor, holding a hand to the wound in his neck. I work my way over to Baz by feel and help him up.
You gonna survive?
I ask him as we help each other down toward the building's medical facilities.
Shit,
he says.
No doubt. What about you? Are you kidding me? I'll outlive you for sure, old man. I don't understand it. I shot him last night. But there he is, walking around like nothing happened.
Charlene watches out the car windshield as I talk. The guy I'm referring to is tall and muscular, moving down the sidewalk in a tailored suit. His skin is dark, but it seems to somehow reflect the city lights instead of absorbing them. His head is shaved to the scalp, and he wears a smirk on his face.
Maybe it's not the same guy,
Charlene says.
Maybe you did kill the guy, but he has a twin brother or something?
I shake my head.
No way, it's him. Besides, I listened to the police scanner pretty much all night, and no one called anything in from that building. I'm telling you, there's something weird going on here. Well, that's why I'm here,
she says.
To help poor little old you get the job done.
I scoff.
Yeah, right. How long have you been at this? I've been freeing souls since before you were wearing makeup. What can I say? Some people just have a natural talent for wet work, and talent beats hard work every day.
I think you have that backward.
The target, whose name is supposedly Okafer, turns the corner up ahead. We lose him from view behind a building.
Okay, here's the plan,
I say, but Charlene cuts me off.
I got this. Watch and learn.
She steps out of the car.
Charlene, that's not a good idea.
She doesn't listen. Cursing under my breath, I get out of the car to follow. As I do, I pull my long, dark coat around, hiding the weapons arranged at my waist. I have a pistol, a knife, and a small bolt gun. At first, I try to catch up with the quicker and younger assassin, but I soon come to my senses. If Charlene wants to go rushing headlong into a dangerous situation, who am I to stop her? She's a grown woman. I've seen many an assassin get too cocky and end up getting killed because of it. I learned long ago to let these things go. But I like Charlene. She may be cocky, but she's got something about her. A spunky energy that reminds me of my little sister, who has refused to talk to me for over a decade now. Still, I follow along at a safe distance, moving through the night like I have somewhere to go, but no real hurry to get there. As I turn the corner, I see Okafer moving into the park a block away. He disappears into the darkness under the trees, heavy with spring foliage. Charlene is about halfway between me and the target, and she glances over her shoulder at me, winking. Soon, she crosses the street and disappears into the same darkness under the trees. I move across, dodging through traffic, and walk along the edge of the park, glancing in to try and locate Charlene and Okafor. There, on one of the dark paths, I see Charlene dart out from some bushes and move like a flash toward Okafor, who seems oblivious. Charlene launches herself into the air, her right hand suddenly appearing with a knife as she lands on Okafor's back. Her hand flashes down repeatedly, stabbing the struggling Okafor in the chest. I rush into the park, looking around for any witnesses. There are none. Most people avoid the park at night in this city. Okafor falls to his knees while Charlene continues stabbing him. Then she stops and steps off as he falls onto his face. She peers down at the target for a long moment before looking up at me. Smiling, she winks at me. There's a flash of movement, and her legs fly out from under her. She hits the ground with a thud, and Okafor is suddenly on top of her. He grips her neck with both hands while she stabs him in the side with her dagger. I rush forward, moving as fast as my old legs will take me. I pull out the bolt gun, the kind used to kill cows in slaughterhouses, and press it against Okafor's head. I pull the trigger. The captive bolt shoots into his skull and then retracts into the gun. Okafor lets go of Charlene and falls to the side. Bending down, I feel for a pulse on Charlene's neck. I feel her heartbeat weakly one time. Then there's nothing. She's dead. Stepping over to Okafor, I do the same thing. There's nothing. No pulse. But just as I'm about to remove my fingers and stand up, his heart beats again, and his eyes snap open. He shoots a hand out, which clamps on my neck. I still have the bolt gun in my hand, so I put it against his forehead and pull the trigger. His hands let up, allowing me to pull in a gasping breath.
"What the hell?"
I say, putting the bolt gun to his chest. I wait to see if he'll come back again. I have a feeling he will. Nearby, Charlene moves. It's just a twitch, but it pulls my attention away, nonetheless, at the exact wrong time. Okafor's arm snaps up again, only this time, instead of grabbing my throat, he hits it with the edge of his hand, damaging my windpipe. On reflex, I pull the trigger, shooting the bolt into his chest, right above his heart. He goes limp once again, and I pull a painful breath in, just barely getting enough oxygen past my partially collapsed windpipe to keep breathing. Although I'm primarily concerned with breathing, I notice something I just can't ignore. It's a golden light spilling forth from where I punched a hole in Okafor's chest. The strange vision sends my mind reeling, but my vision soon starts to go dark. I'm not getting enough oxygen. I'm slowly suffocating. I stand up, eyes sweeping over Charlene. Her eyes are open now. They weren't before. It's nothing I can think about now. I move toward the edge of the park, hoping I'll be able to get to a hospital before I pass out. It's no use. I make it a few steps off the grass and collapse, head swimming and panic building. My vision goes fully dark, and I take my last agonized breath while clawing at the grass. An immense beam of golden light erupts from overhead, bathing me in its glory. Somehow, I breathe the light in, and it's the sweetest air I've ever tasted. I feel it course through my body, chasing the pain away ahead of its glorious wave. I feel as energized as a 20-year-old, and the constant aches of my old body fade away as if by magic. But when I open my eyes, I'm confused by what I see. This isn't heaven. I'm still in the park, just off the pathway. Charlene steps into view, looking more alive than ever.
"Oh, good," she says. "You're up."
I sit up and look over at Okafor. There's a hole in his chest, dark, and about the size of a softball. Looking up at Charlene, I say,
"How?"
She smiles.
"I don't suppose you believe in immortality, do you?"
"I kill people for a living,"
I tell her.
"Of course not." "Well, you better start, because you're it now. You're immortal. Welcome to the ranks of the unkillable. At least, Unless someone rips your new heart out like I just did to poor Okafor over here.
New heart? I say.
What? I like you, old man, Charlene says. But you're slow on the uptake. Still, I think we're going to have a lot of good years of killing assholes ahead of us. As long as we follow the rules and don't deviate from the plan, like poor Okafor.
Immortal, huh? I say, looking at my hands. They appear just the same, but they feel different.
I could get used to that. I really could.
I don't have a shot,
I whispered.
Those guys are in the way.
They almost die, Ledger,
Ileana said over the radio, her voice a guide in my earpiece.
They're all involved.
I sat crouched behind a pallet of wood at the dark construction site. Six men in suits stood about 20 yards away, talking. We were on the seventh floor of the unfinished building. It was nothing more than a skeleton made out of metal and concrete. Outside, beyond the glassless windows, rain poured down. I had watched from my perch as the men arrived in groups of two from three sleek black cars. The drivers got out of the car and popped umbrellas, walking the important men from the backs of the cars into the building. Then the construction elevator had whirred to life, bringing them up two at a time as they arrived. Now that they were all here, I had a job to do. I'd been training for this ever since I could walk, one way or another. Ileana was always there, delivering harsh criticism and encouragement when needed. Despite all the skills I'd gathered, I still felt like the teenager I'd been until my birthday last month. Peering around the pallet of wood, I watched them. But there was one man in particular I was here for. He had his artificially dark hair slicked back like some stockbroker from the 80s. His eyes were cruel, brows always slanted, making him look angry all the time. And from what I knew about him, he was angry all the time. His name was Holt, Darren Holt, and I knew he liked to meet with his crew bosses at places like this because they were sure it wouldn't be bugged.
Do it,
Ileana said.
Do what you came here to do.
I raised the Heckler & Koch VP9 pistol. It had a 17-round magazine and one in the chamber. 18 bullets was plenty for six guys, if my training was any indication. Plus, I had spare mags on my hip, but I had never fired at a human before. Holt was still partially obscured by two guys standing with their backs to me. I picked my targets and mentally rehearsed my sequence, knowing I would save the two guys with their backs to me for last, since they would have to turn completely around to get a bead on me. I aimed at the man on the far left of the group, his face in profile to me, and I fired. Two rounds to the dome, the man went down. But I was already shifting over to the next guy in line, the one standing next to Holt. Two rounds into that guy, and he went down before he'd even had a chance to touch his gun. But now the men were all moving, scattering, shifting. I suddenly had a shot at Holt, but instead of taking it, I jumped my barrel over him to the next guy and fired. The guy went down. I wasn't missing. Holt bolted to my left, away from the elevator, which was the smart move. He knew where the shots were coming from, which meant he knew that running for the elevator would be a death sentence. The two guys who'd had their backs to me split up, one going right and the other left. I fired at the one going right, who went down. I still had 10 rounds left as I stood up and bolted after Holt and the other guy. I turned the corner and fired at the guy who'd been slower on the uptake than Holt. He went down, and I ran past him as I went after Holt. As I turned another corner, I saw Holt jump out through the window at the end of the hallway there. I knew what he was doing. The way the building was constructed, there was a 5-yard gap between building wings. Holt was jumping down to the lower floor. I ran down and jumped out through the same window. My momentum took me across and down through the 6th-floor window on the other side. I rolled and came up on my knees in time to see a 2x4 flying at my face. The impact whipped my head sideways, and I lost my grip on the gun. Holt must have lost his gun in the jump. Dropping the board, Holt scrambled for the gun, but I fought the pain and jumped for it. We both grabbed it at the same time and struggled for it. I got up to my feet, fighting against Holt, who was trying to point the gun at my head. My face was bleeding, and I felt as though something had broken when Holt hit me with the board. My eye felt loose in its socket, so I figured it was one of my orbital bones that had shattered. The pain seemed to sap my energy. Holt was forcing the barrel closer and closer to my face as we struggled a few feet from the window we'd both jumped through.
This man is not your father,
Ileana said in my earpiece.
He may be blood, but he is not your father. The only reason you are here is because of what he did to your mother. He raped her, Ledger. He raped her and drove her to suicide. And he's done the same to many other girls and women. So balance the books. You're stronger than him. Balance the books, Ledger.
A surge of anger released inside me from the same dark place that had led me here, to this profession, to this way of life. I momentarily let my arms go limp while simultaneously ducking my head out of the way and twisting my body. Holt wasn't ready for it. He lost his balance, and I pulled him over toward me, swinging him at the window. Then I let go, letting him have the gun. He backpedaled, overbalanced, until the backs of his legs hit the bottom of the window. He went backward into the rain and the night. I didn't hear him hit, thanks to the downpour, but when I looked down, I saw his broken body sprawled on the ground 6 stories below.
Good job,
Ileana said.
Now go get your gun back and get the hell out of there. The cleanup crew will be there soon.
I looked up at the surrounding buildings, wondering where Ileana had posted up, and I managed to smile. That wasn't so bad. Not so bad at all. Hey guys, thanks for listening. I want to give you all a quick heads up regarding some upcoming political ads you may start hearing leading up to this year's presidential election. These ads do not represent my own political viewpoint. So if you hear a political ad play on the podcast and it's not in my own voice, then it has absolutely nothing to do with me personally as a podcaster. Thank you again for being a dedicated listener of mine, and I can't wait to have another amazing year with you guys. I'll see you in the next episode.